62 Seattle. Now, from the Star Rental Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All right, here we go. Headlines on a Monday afternoon, 3:02, right here on Softy and Dick, brought to you, of course, by our friends at VenueKings.com.
More than anything, I want better execution. Are we clear on that? I want better execution.
The Buccaneers, for the second time in franchise history, are the winners of the Super Bowl, 31-9 over Kansas City yesterday. Tom Brady has now won, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, but seven championships. Patrick Mahomes, 52.3 pass rating, the lowest of his career yesterday. Brady, 21 of 29, three touchdowns, pass rating of 125.8. Congratulations to Tampa Bay and the Buccaneers on winning Super Bowl 55 yesterday.
Gonzaga and Baylor again 1-2 in the latest poll, and for the first time in 60 years, Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, UCLA, and Kentucky all out of the top 25 at the same time.
I saw that. By the way, Gonzaga's game on Thursday with Santa Clara not going to happen because of COVID issues at Santa Clara. And how about the Cougs, man? Football team quarterback Jaden Delora suspended indefinitely. Pullman police say he was arrested over the weekend for a DUI.
Vikings have promoted Clint Kubiak to offensive coordinator. Yes, that is Gary's son.
And Bruce Arians telling Peter King yesterday that wide receiver Mike Evans, who was due $12.5 million in 2021, has offered to reduce his salary to help the Buccaneers retain key free agents over the offseason. That's a great idea for somebody in Seattle. Who could that guy be? I don't know.
Speaking of that guy, he's been named Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year. Congratulations to Russell Wilson.
Very cool. Second time in franchise history. Largent won it back in 88. And Richard Sherman, you remember that name? Told Stephen A. Smith he plans to play two more years and then quit.
And here we go.
And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers.
Just brutal radio. Just horrible.
Live.
41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
Hey, Seattle.
This is Softy and Dick.
We had that conversation off the air. Jackson Phelps and I in the sports pit. How big a deal is it to Seahawks fans that Russell Wilson has won the Walter Payton Man of the Year? I feel like this is the second time in a week we've had that kind of how much do you care conversation. We talked about COVID not creeping into the Seahawks locker room, only team in the NFL to not have a positive case. Russell Wilson over the weekend wins the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, which I told my wife, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong on this, that it's one of those awards that seems to be way more appreciated and respected among the player ranks than the fan ranks. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would think so. And I think the COVID thing is a bigger deal because that has a tangible impact on your football team this particular year. And if you were able to do something that none of the other 31 football teams were able to do, I think that's impressive. The Man of the Year thing, hey, we always knew Russell Wilson was a Man of the Year type player. So yeah, it's nice that he got the recognition, but I don't think of Russell Wilson any differently today than I did before he got the Man of the Year award.
Yeah, actually, I was I told Jackson this off the air. I was just about ready to start thinking Russell Wilson was a D-bag, and then he won the Walter Payton
Man of
the Year.
Oh, I was wrong.
No, you know what? Totally wrong on that. Sorry, I changed my mind. Never should have thought that about him. But, hey, listen, congrats to Russell Wilson, second Seahawk player to win the award, going back to Steve Largent in 1988. But I think we all know what award we want Russell Wilson to win, and that's the award that Tom Brady won last night, which is the Super Bowl MVP, his seventh Lombardi Trophy. Just insane how here we are yet again, Dick, and the story is once again Tom Brady. And what he was able to accomplish, man. You know, I told you guys last week, I told Kevin and Furness in Crosstalk that I was rooting for Kansas City for a lot of reasons, most of which because, I believe this, I think it would have been great for the NFL to have the storyline of Kansas City going for three in a row. I think over the entire offseason, heading into the fall, heading into September, that would have been the narrative. Everybody would have been checking to see when they play Kansas City, when are the Chiefs coming to town. It would have been an event, right, to have Kansas City in your stadium, in your hometown. So the fact that that's now off the table kind of bums me out a little bit. I think it'd be great for the NFL to go for something like that. But Tom Brady, man, and you know, I said this last night on Twitter. If you don't believe he's not the greatest football player of all time now, after what you saw this year, you're either a moron or Bill Belichick, and you're just too bitter to admit it because that was unbelievable what they did. This guy's going to be 44 years old in August, and if you're watching that game with somebody who was not a football fan, and had never seen a football game before in their life, you could say to that person, yeah, that guy's 28 years old.
Oh, absolutely.
And they'd buy it.
Yeah, they would totally buy it. And I don't know what's a bigger deal to me. I mean, I think the bigger deal nationally is what Tom and Tampa did versus what Kansas City did. But to me, I just keep coming out of that game thinking, my God, Kansas City. Like, how can you possibly walk onto the field and just get punked from the get-go like that? Just like your level of want to, not only the level of fired up you were compared to Tampa, but just the fact that you were so undisciplined in that football game from the coaching staff on down to have 90 yards in penalties in one quarter. Mm. I mean, that's a lot of penalties for a game.
Right.
And they accomplished it in one quarter. That, to me, was kind of the lingering thing that just made that game so sour to watch was only one of two teams actually came to play a football game on Super Bowl Sunday, and it was sad.
Well, I think, honestly, looking back on it, man, and it's easy to say it now because we all saw the game yesterday, I think the Buccaneers just smelled blood in the water, really, with that offensive line of Kansas City. You're talking about the strength of Tampa Bay outside of their quarterback is their defensive front, and the weakness of Kansas City by far in that game yesterday was their patchwork offensive line, and they just threw them around like they were a rag doll.
Yes.
You want the best example of that? Go back and watch late first half. If you got the game on tape, go just cue this up, all right? 3rd and 6 from the Tampa 14. The Chiefs have the ball. They're down 14-3. They're going in for maybe a score to make it 14-10. Brand new ball game maybe at that point. And the Tampa Bay defensive line was 4 versus 5, and they made them look like it was an NFL team against a freaking Pee-wee team. Destroyed those guys. I mean, all 4 Tampa Bay Buccaneer defensive linemen are in the backfield literally like a second and a half after the ball snapped. They couldn't do anything against that front. And I think that, you know, that gets to a problem, I think, mentally for a football team to know there's no way we can handle these guys. And you saw that from the start of the game, from the first quarter. It was obvious that Kansas City was have problems blocking those guys with 5 offensive linemen. And that's one of my questions for you when he comes on next segment. Look, I haven't seen every Andy Reid called game in his life. I haven't seen every Eagle game and every Chief game and every Packer game when Andy Reid was a part of their staff with Mike Holmgren. But that is the worst called game I've ever seen Andy Reid have, ever in his life. Because he, from the first drive on, when it was apparent that offensive line was in trouble, they either A, could not adjust, or B, did not want to adjust. And it almost got Patrick Mahomes killed in the game last night.
Pressured on 29 dropbacks, and as you mentioned, 27 of the 29 were with 4 or fewer defenders. He only got pressured twice on blitzes.
How does that happen?
To have 5 men protecting, he protected with 5 guys on all but 4 dropbacks the entire game. He only brought extra help on 4 dropbacks. Now, having said that, you're right. That's a huge key to the game, probably the number one key to the game.
Right.
But where the game turned had nothing to do with the offensive line. The game turned for me on starts with a Kelsey drop on 3rd down, then a penalty on a punt that cost 32 yards, then a penalty on the Tyrone Mathieu interception, nullifies the interception, and then a penalty on the field goal, gives Tampa Bay a 1st down, takes the field goal off the board, and puts a touchdown on the board. That 4-play sequence had absolutely nothing to do with the offensive line, and I think totally changed the whole trajectory of that football game.
Well, and then also the stupid way they handled the half, which was just amateur hour by Kansas City, and I agree with you, that sequence there was gigantic, but Kansas City just never had an answer. I mean, Patrick Mahomes went the entire game without getting in the end zone. Talked about this in Crosstalk. What would the odds have been on that? On Kansas City not scoring a touchdown after thrashing these guys earlier in the year. To me, Dick, it's just another reminder as we kind of maybe try to bring it back to what's happening in Seattle, how if the Seahawks really want to take that next step, they have to find a way to dominate on the line of scrimmage. Dominate.
Yep.
Okay, and look, you can dominate when the opposite team has injuries, like we saw yesterday with Kansas City, but the guys they have on their defensive front obviously took advantage of that, and I thought they demoralized Kansas City's offense from the first quarter on with the way they were manhandling those guys and just throwing them around like they were on freaking roller skates. So I'm watching that game thinking, man, we got to upgrade our offensive line. We need some more answers on the defensive front. Vita Vea. You saw Vita Vea last night. Did you think Vita Vea was impactful in that game yesterday?
He didn't have the. He wasn't out in front as much as Shaq Barrett was.
Right, but he's pushing guys all over the place.
Yes,
he had one tackle.
Yeah.
One, and he's shoving guys back, you know, five, six yards of play the entire game. Who do we have that's even remotely like that on the Seahawks?
You're right. They have to invest in both lines. The Tampa Bay Bucs showed you the blueprint. They did it on the line of scrimmage, and they did it with balanced attack. That, what we saw yesterday, is what Seattle Seahawks football should be. Efficient, mistake-free. They only threw it 29 times, but they completed it 21 for three touchdowns, and they ran it for 145 yards.
Let's get Hugh Millen's take on what he saw yesterday.
You guys had what, Hugh Millen?
The president of the local Tom Brady fan club chapter
is
going to join us, grinning from ear to ear. He's going to be insufferable, I'm telling you, next on 950 KJR.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your Super Bowl 55 hangover station, Sports Radio 950 KJR.
5:03 to go. Someone has run on the field. Some guy with a bra. And now he's not being chased. He's running down the middle of the 40. Arms in the air and a victory salute. He's pulling down his pants. Put up your pants, my man. Pull up those pants. He's being chased to the 30. He breaks a tackle from a security guard. The 20, down the middle, the 10, the 5. He slides at the 1, and they converge on him at the goal line. Pull up your pants. Take off the bra and be a man. And the players with hands on hips at the other end of the field are looking at him and shaking their head and saying, why, oh, why is this taking place in a Super Bowl?
You know how they put, like, movies and albums in the National Archive to make sure that they're protected in case of, like, a natural disaster, you know, Wizard of Oz, things like that, whatever. I think when Kevin Harlan goes one day to the Happy Hunting Ground, they should just take him and put him in the National Archives, because he is a freaking legend. He's an absolute national treasure. He'll join us on Wednesday's show, obviously, but who would have thought that, you know, that streaker with the bra on his head and the bickering about the halftime show would be the biggest stories in some ways for a lot of people coming out of this game, because of what a blowout it was by Tampa Bay and the Buccaneers. But Dick, joining us right now on the radio show, and I can say this, I know, out loud, because he wears this label proudly, the local president of the local chapter of the Tom Brady fan club, our guy Huey Millen joins us right here on the radio show. Seven titles for your guy. How about that? Did you ever think you'd see the day, Dewey, where a quarterback would win seven Super Bowls in his career?
No, never did, and I wish it would have been a more exciting game for everybody. But, you know, I think he's showing his greatness. Was his greatest game ever? No, but he threw for 505 yards against the Eagles when they lost.
Yep.
That's not just a Super Bowl record, a playoff record. And, you know, he did, I guess, what nobody had ever done in that first half, 80% completion plus three touchdown passes. So he did what he needed to do. They coasted. There was no scoring in the football game the last 18 minutes of the game.
Right.
So it was just, you know, obviously – it was the defense of Tampa Bay that gets the headlines.
Let's talk about those adjustments, because certainly Tampa Bay's defense got scorched in week number 12. They got none of that in this game. So what were the major X's and O's adjustments that Todd Bowles made?
Well, in my study, well, real simple. They stopped playing man-to-man and one-high defenses, and they just said, hey, we're going to play a defense that is going to, you know, defense taketh, defense giveth. We're going to give them the run. They played nickel on every single down of the game, not a down of, and at least by my tape study, and I was up late last night, watched every play. They had Devin White and Lavonte David, and then Sean Murphy Bunting was the nickel guy playing outside linebacker. Now, they think enough of him that they put him on Tyreek Hill in man-to-man situations. So he's 195 pounds at the combine, runs a 4.42, right? Yet he was playing Sam linebacker in their for the entire game, and the Chiefs never really challenged them from a running perspective. And then the other part I would just say this is Devin White. Remember, Dave, when they had the two Devins in the draft,
yep.
Devin Bush from Michigan, Devin White, and we're like, wait a minute, this is freak stuff. This guy ran a 4.42. To give you an idea, Devin White is a freaking emerging superstar. I'm sitting there going through, as I'm watching him, I'm trying to think, have I ever seen an inside linebacker? Now, I know he plays the will, but in the front they have, it's much like an inside linebacker. Have I ever seen a guy who plays on the inside that's as talented as, I'm thinking about Junior Seau, I'm thinking about Ray Lewis.
Wow.
This guy ran a 4.42 at the combine. Mm. To put that into perspective, the database that I have since 1987, 387 inside linebackers have ran at the combine. He has the single fastest time And for further perspective on that, take cornerbacks. Now, cornerbacks are more likely to run. In that same database, 1,016 cornerbacks have run in the combine. He would rank 115th. He'd be in the top 11%, or say it another way, he'd be in the 89th percentile speed-wise for cornerbacks. Wow. And he's a 237-pound inside linebacker who's nasty with great agility, who wants to hit you at every opportunity. He's a superstar. They could play with just two safeties back and a 195-pound nickel, and Kansas City never brought the physical game to challenge him in that regard.
Well, there's a reason why the guy was taken, what, top five, I think, Devin White was at LSU.
Which rarely happens.
Yeah, for a middle linebacker. You don't see that very often at all. But I thought that they were helped out, though, a little bit by Andy Reid's play calling and his protection schemes. And like I said to Dick in the last segment, Hugh, I haven't seen every game that Andy Reid has called in his career. I can't imagine many that were worse than that. It was obvious to me from the first drive of the game that Kansas City's offensive line was going to need some help, and to my amateur eye, it didn't really feel like they got help the entire afternoon. How about you?
Well, they had a game plan to try and stretch the field, and I think that they never really ran the football and tried to play real dink and dunk. And now they've faced those two high structures. The telecast had it at 83%, mm-hmm. too high, meaning the safety's back, not in run support. There was about a handful of the typical garden variety 2-eye defenses, cover 2, TD 5 under, cover 4, which is 4 deep, 3 under, 2-man in passing situations where it's man-to-man, press coverage with a safety on either half of the field. So those are coverages that everybody sees. They did also where they played cover 2 to one side in a 4 structure. I don't want to get too elaborate. My point is there was nothing really unprecedented with what they did. They just rotated a handful of two high structures, and then as it pertains to the pass rush, they never really chipped. It created more problems than I would have thought. But you look at Tom Brady, and there was times where he would have potentially been pressured. He knows exactly where his outlets are, and when things close down, boom, that ball's going to the running back. Meanwhile, Patrick Mahomes is giving ground, running all over the place, and you could play two-man against him, which is the defense you'd never want to play against a mobile quarterback, but that toe that he had clearly had him somewhat neutralized. He's still a good athlete, but he's only a 4.8 flat at the combine, which is below the median for quarterbacks. So I think his athleticism is overrated. You throw a busted toe on him, and that was even worse. The fact that you could play two-man, mm-hmm. and then my final thought on two-man is here I'm lauding Devin White, who's clearly an emerging superstar. Levante David has been one of the best, most athletic linebackers in this league for a long time. He was the guy that was drawing man-to-man cover on Travis Kelce when they played a defense called cover two-man, which they did in most passing situations. So credit him. I just thought that they had a front seven, again, including a 195-pound Sam Backer. They had a front seven that controlled the run, was able to get the pass rush, and that enabled them to play deep and really have a deep umbrella shell to keep Tyreek Hill in check.
These guys that you're talking about on defense, Hugh, were on this football team last year. And this is the one reason why I didn't think Tampa Bay was going to even make the playoffs, let alone the Super Bowl, because they gave up the fourth most points in the NFL last year. So what does bringing in Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski and those guys on the offense do for a defense?
Well, we can only speculate. And all the comments, you just can imagine – when a guy like that is so accomplished, I mean, we saw the Jordan documentary. I just think that it boosts everybody by, 10, 20%. It's like in Madden football. You just go into the settings or something or hack the thing and give everybody a 20% boost.
Yep.
Right? And it's not just their buy-in, because they see the all-time buy-in guy in Brady, but I think it's their confidence. Like, hey, we got freaking John Wayne on our side. And so, it's clear the depths of it. Maybe they'll write a book someday. But as you said, they were a 7-9 team last year. They haven't been in the playoffs since 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, you know, New England, they went 7-9 this year. So Bill Belichick's legacy took a hit this year. It's perhaps Brady's crowning achievement.
Well, we can talk about that later on as well, about the Belichick angle on this. But Hugh Millen's with us. And look, I just wonder the end of the half there, the way the Chiefs handled that. You know, here it is. It's a 14-6 game, right? And Tampa Bay's running out the clock, it looks like, on the first play of that last drive. And Kansas City all of a sudden starts calling timeouts right and left and gives Tampa Bay a chance to reset. They get the PI down the sideline, the PI the back of the end zone, the touchdown all of a sudden. Instead of 14-6 with the Chiefs getting the ball to open the second half, it's 21-6. What'd you make of the way the Chiefs handled the first half there?
It reminded me of the NFC Championship game. I thought that play that Kevin King got roasted on, thought that was one of the worst defensive calls I've seen in decades. Mm-hmm. That with 8 seconds to go, that you would have, I mean, you called me at halftime of that game, and I told you, I said, well, no, you got to have Kevin King roll up. Let him take away the field goal, put a safety over the top to help take away the touchdown. They didn't have any timeouts. So I thought that was inexplicable. What you saw yesterday with under 25 seconds to go, I don't know the exact yard line, but Tampa Bay had the ball at about their own 45 on the play that I'm guessing their own 45 where they had the pass interference. Mm-hmm. They call cover three, which is a single safety defense, which puts the outside receiver in man-to-man. It's like playing man-to-man. And they're throwing to Mike Evans, one of the premier big, deep threats.
24 seconds to go in the half.
24 seconds to go. What was the yard line? It was in Tampa territory.
Tampa,
right?
I don't know. 42.
42, okay. So, and you're calling cover three, bump and run, cover three? That is a hideous call, almost as bad as the one in the NFC Championship game. And Tom Brady's going, look, if you jokers, if you fools want to go single coverage with me outside, under 25 seconds to go in the damn half, I mean, just hand it to me. It's like Halloween. Just walk up to the porch and ring the doorbell, and they're handing you freaking points. You know, he's going to take it. Yeah. He's Tom freaking Brady. I just think that was idiotic again. It really set. If you look at the camera, just watch the broadcast. Look at all the bickering. Now, you know, it's Tyrann Mathieu, but there was other guys. Every time they flashed the sideline, there was a demoralized Chief barking and woofing and showing his frustration, or it was Travis Kelce with 26 and a half minutes to go after a third down miss on him. He's sitting on the ground just pouting. You know, just want to hand him a binky and a blanket so that he can. You know, this is what happens in Super Bowls. Teams get taken out of their game, and then all of a sudden they get really frustrated and they get demoralized. And that's where a guy like Brady never gets any of those things. Now, he's lost Super Bowls, but you tell me a time where Tom Brady has ever been demoralized until the clock gets to 0-0-0. Mm-hmm. And you know, that end of the second quarter had to be pivotal. I know some of the Kansas City, they're probably talking about the officials and all, but why do you go cover three against Mike Evans in that situation? I'll never get it.
Yeah, it was embarrassing. I mean, you got to deserve the calls. I'm not gonna criticize the officials. I mean, Kansas City's got to earn those calls, and they didn't. But I was thinking at halftime, Hugh, all right, not only is KC going to come out with some fire, you know, after an ass chewing at halftime, they're going to have some adjustments. They're going to have some offensive tweaks. Were there offensive tweaks, and why didn't they work?
It's really simple. The two things in my mind, you got to run the football more. You have to pay for A, their scheme, which is they didn't have an extra safety down, and then B, their personnel. Now, the personnel, I will note, they remind me of how the Huskies play defense. You know how the Huskies almost play with two nose tackles? They play a four-man front. They play with two nose tackles, and they play nickel. Mm-hmm. Tampa Bay was reminiscent, to my eye, of what the Huskies do, because think of Ndamukong Suh. He is, at one point in his career, been the dominant inside player in this league, and he's motivated with Tom Brady. And then you've got Vita Vea, who's in the discussion for the strongest players in all of the NFL. You know, and like a strongest man, you know, throw a keg over a freaking pole vault. Like, Vita Vea is a freaking Sasquatch of a man. So those two guys inside, I'm sitting there talking about how they had a light box, but those inside guys still deserve to be made mention. But you still have to run. And then you have to throw short and in the middle of the field against those two, the majority of those two high structures. And that circles back again to the three guys that were playing linebacker for Tampa Bay. You got Lavonte David, who's been one of the great athletes in this league for several years. You got Devin White, who I'm sitting here, if you believe me, I'm sitting there asking myself, have I ever seen as physically talented of a linebacker as Devin White? And then Sean Bunting, this 195-pound second round pick out of Central Michigan, only 195 pounds, but this cat ran a 4.42 and he jumped 41 and a half inches.
Wow.
So they had great athletic, that, and that's a testament to his burst. So they could cover guys. And so Travis Kelce, the Lavonte David shut him down. They had guys that could really cover ground on the inside. And that's usually how you peck away is attack those short intermediate guys. They had great athletes at three positions inside.
Hugh Mellon with us. I feel kind of, guys, and maybe I'm the only guy thinking this, maybe I'm just bitter and biased, which is certainly possible, that Bruce Arians just cheated his way to a title, right? I mean, he goes out, he gets Tom Brady, and they win the damn Super Bowl. I mean, the guy hadn't done jack squat. He'd won one playoff game up until this year. And because Tom Brady and Bill Belichick can't find a way to get along, and Tom Brady becomes available, and because the Niners turned him down, maybe, is part of this story, he ends up landing Tom Brady. That was close there, by the way. And now he wins a Super Bowl. I mean, how much credit, honestly, Hugh, you tell us, how much credit should we give Bruce Arians for this?
Well, my initial answer would be next to nothing. And it'll probably, yeah, well, I think 10, 20 years from now, we'll just kind of, like you said, the guy had one career win. Now he has five. You know, Tom Brady has accounted for 80% of his total career wins, and it's only been, you know, blink of an eye, right, in his career. But the best thing I can say is this, as a head coach, you are generally tasked with assigning your staff.
Mm-hmm.
And the job that Todd Bowles did, mm-hmm, to make those adjustments, and that was one of the great performances by a defense and from a scheme standpoint. So, you know, I always say everything goes through the head coach's headset, right, both literally and figuratively. And so the signing of Todd Bowles and Todd and giving him the free reign, say, hey, dude, come up with a plan. You have to give Arian some credit for that.
The pass-run ratio for the playoffs for the Bucs was 53-47. In the Super Bowl, they ran it more than they threw it. Tom only threw it 29 times. Is that replicable by the Seahawks, and should it be?
Well, I think they controlled the game, so a lot of that, those numbers are skewed. They have a unique running philosophy, and they've had it since Arians was at the Cardinals, at least. And what they like to do is they like to get into two tight ends on one side, really load up the formations and get you to be conscious of several gaps to one side of the field. They just kind of plunge the ball. They almost do like gap skiing, down blocking on the strong side of the formation, and it's almost like a dive on the weak side. And then they get the wide receiver. Nobody's ever going to talk about Godwin. Chris Godwin,
yep.
Number 14.
Yep.
But he was doing what they were asking Larry Fitzgerald to do at the Cardinals, which is reduce your split and then block every single time. Don't block the corner. Block the safety. So what they're trying to do is induce the running back and of course, Fournette, and they got big running backs to bounce outside. And then be one-on-one with the corners. And there was a time, for example, where Fournette just trucked Breland, number 21, the corner for the Chiefs. Yeah. The very next play, the ball came back on a cutback to Breland. Dude, he was looking for a freaking foxhole. He stared at the ground, dived at the ankles, and he was just beat up. So their plan to try and get one-on-one with corners over and over again, it has to do with the formations, the personnel. A wide receiver is willing to go in there and get dirty and block safeties, not corners. And so they were just the more physical team. It looked like Kansas City didn't have a big weapon, wide receiver, that Sammy Watkins, I mean, was nowhere to be found. So they didn't have a big receiver to go catch the contested balls inside.
Yep.
It just looked like they wanted to play 7-on-7. Tampa Bay was the more physical team, and that was borne out in the way they ran the football and the way they defended Kansas City in that deep pass game. It was a testament to physical football.
No doubt.
In addition to all the rest of it.
No doubt. And the fact that Kansas City's offensive line looked like a freaking high school team at times.
Yes.
Out there.
That part helped too.
That was a huge factor. Let's do this. We'll have you on again Friday, and we'll give you some more time to kind of dive into Tom Brady and what he just accomplished, because he deserves it, man. Listen, great
Rock
stuff. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Talk soon.
All right, Hugh Millen with us. We're going to break. Nate Bucati will join us from Kansas City. What's the reaction out there? What do they think about what they saw yesterday? Coming up on Softy and Dick.
It's Staples.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your Super Bowl 55 hangover station. Sports Radio 950, KJR.
All right, boys and girls, busy Monday show right here on 950 KJR. I thought I heard something there in that little headlines there from the iHeart Sports guy. I want to react to it 4 o'clock because it just made no sense to me. But you know what? I hear things on this station all the time that make no sense, usually on this show from 3 until 7 every day. But joining us right now, we know how much it sucks to lose a Super Bowl.
Yes, we do.
And it stinks, man. Nate Bucati, morning show host on 810 WHB, is with us on the radio show. Long day for him. We appreciate you doing this, man. First of all, Nate, thank you. And second of all, what's the collective mindset of the Chief Nation right now after watching that debacle yesterday, man?
Well, it's obviously not nearly as jubilant as it was this time a year ago when the Chiefs had won the Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years. So certainly this one is not nearly as happy. I will say that I do think that the fact that the team won the thing last year softens this one quite a bit, because it's been such a long time. And I also think the fact that, maybe this is naive, but I think that most people in Kansas City feel like this is not the last time that Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs will make it to the Super Bowl. But as you guys know, just because you have a great quarterback doesn't mean you're going to make it there every year.
Yep.
So there's certainly a sense of an opportunity lost here. A lot of different, directions as to, the theories here in town as to what went wrong and all of that. But, look, the one thing I think that I would say is very common around here is nobody saw this coming. I think we all could have pictured the Bucs winning the game, but I don't think anybody in Kansas City thought that there was any way the Bucs would blow the Chiefs out. We haven't seen the Chiefs get blown out since Patrick Mahomes has been the quarterback. It hasn't happened. So to see it happen in the Super Bowl was certainly a shock for everyone here.
Finger pointing, I'm sure, was the name of the game on the morning show today. So who took the most heat from the fans?
Well, I ranked it this way, guys. For me, the factors that led to the Chiefs' loss, number one, I think you don't have to be some sort of football genius to realize what a mismatch there was on the offensive line for the Chiefs versus the defensive line of the Bucs. And look, everybody that we talked to last week, the 2 weeks leading up to the game, told us this was going to be a major problem, that losing Eric Fisher was going to really hurt the Chiefs in this game, especially against that pass rush of the Bucs. And I'll be honest, we were looking through rose-colored glasses here in Kansas City, and my reaction and a lot of people's was, okay, yeah, I'm sure it'll be a factor in the game, but we've seen the Chiefs go to war with people all year long with their backup offensive line for the most part, and still have the best offensive numbers in the game. So I really thought that the Chiefs would be able to mitigate that a lot better than they did. And it was absolutely a one-sided affair. Patrick Mahomes was running for his life the entire game. You guys have probably seen all the advanced statistics that say he was under pressure more than any quarterback in the history of the NFL. So that's number one. Number two, I don't know how much you guys covered it in your area, but the situation with Andy Reid's son, Britt Reid, and the car accident that's left a 5-year-old girl fighting for her life here in Kansas City, we will all be left to wonder for the rest of our lives how much that did or didn't affect this team. Andy Reid is tremendous, almost scary in his ability to compartmentalize his own personal life issues and set those to the side. But we also know that all of these Chiefs players absolutely adore and revere Andy Reid. And what he and his family are going through right now, you guys would never be able to convince me that didn't in some ways cast a pall over the entire team and damage their mindset. That was the worst performance I've seen the Chiefs play since Patrick Mahomes became the quarterback. I can't prove it. No one will know it. But it's hard to convince me that that didn't have at least some sort of an effect on this team going into the game, and we'll always be left to wonder how much. So that was a big factor. I mean, guys, you had players like, you know, Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill dropping open passes that hit them right in the hands or right in the face mask after Mahomes made miraculous plays. That's something you don't see. You know, that's never been a part of the deal with the Kansas. I mean, those two guys usually are as great as Mahomes is when they play. And so, you know, that was a big factor. I thought there were some coaching decisions that really hurt the team. You know, Andy Reid's aggressive decision to call that timeout on 3rd and 2 at the end of the first half. Look, he's been aggressive. They've been aggressive. But that seemed like, man, you're only down by one score getting the ball back to start the second half. Is this really the time to do that? And obviously the decision ended up costing them a touchdown. So there were a lot of factors, but I think it all started up front. That defensive line of the Bucs dominated the game.
Totally, and I think the Andy Reid situation with his son had to play a factor because there's no other way to explain it. I mean, it was obvious to all of us they were having issues from the first drive on with the line, and it didn't feel like Andy Reid, Nate, made a lot of adjustments, if any at all, almost as if he was completely distracted, which you would think he would be after what happened on Friday. But you mentioned kind of a opportunity lost, and that's what I was telling Dick here, you know, on the air last week as well, that I thought it would have been really cool for the NFL to see him win, and then the narrative of them going for 3 in a row. You got 2 more years left this year, next year, before the big money starts to creep into the salary cap. And is that kind of the way you're looking at it? That, hey, look, man, if we're going to get this thing to win a second one, and this was a great chance to do it. We got 1 more year left next year before his contract blows up in 2022.
Well, certainly we know it's a lot easier, right, to win. You guys know as well as anybody, it's a lot easier to win when your quarterback's not making a ton of money.
Yeah.
You don't have to get as many other things right. I think Chiefs fans a lot of Chiefs fans have been looking at what the New England Patriots did with Tom Brady all that time, and, you know, figuring out that, hey, if you got the best quarterback in the league hands down, you know, you can keep making it to the Super Bowl even when you're not paying everybody else a ton of money. But look, Tom Brady's is different. I mean, he just went and showed that. He went to another organization and was able to go to a Super Bowl and win it. So, you know, is Patrick Mahomes that good? I'll tell you what, guys, this was the first time. This was the first time where Patrick Mahomes wasn't – he's been the greatest deodorant in the history of Kansas City. Anything that stinks with the Chiefs, he makes it smell good. You know, he makes everything – he covers up all the mistakes, and this was the first time ever – that I've seen him not actually be able to make up for all of the deficiencies out there on the field. And look, the Chiefs have a good roster. They've had a good team the last 2 years, yep. 3 years, really. The defense really stunk 2 years ago, but since then it's been a good team. But he had guys let him down around him. He was running for his life and still making some of the most miraculous throws I've ever seen, and the guys weren't catching him this time. But it was an eye-opener. I think the Kansas City needs to realize that The bottom line is great quarterbacks don't win championships, great teams do. And having a great quarterback is the number one step, but you still got to have other pieces. There's a reason that Tom Brady went and got Gronk and AB out of retirement, right? You got to have some other pieces. So, yeah, you're right. I think that everybody understands here that while we can daydream that this team's going to be relevant for a decade and a half to come, hopefully, it certainly doesn't punch your ticket to the Super Bowl. Because Aaron Rodgers is another great example of you can have an unbelievably talented quarterback, but it doesn't mean everything's going to come together and get you to the Super Bowl.
No doubt. Nate, great stuff, man. Best of luck. I will just repeat a line that Grant Wistrom gave me after they lost, the Seahawks did to Pittsburgh in 05. It sucks to lose a Super Bowl. And now you get to sit around for 9 months thinking about it. So enjoy.
Hey, you know what, guys? This is the second greatest year the Chiefs have ever had in my 45 years on this earth.
Mm.
So I'm trying to remind myself that just this time, just 2 years ago, this town was begging to just appear in a Super Bowl because it never happened in our lifetime.
Good attitude.
So, I like your attitude. You got a positive attitude, man, for sure. Keep it going, buddy. We'll talk soon and tell Sir Red we said hello, okay? Thanks, buddy.
You got it, fellas.
You bet. Nate Buchady, 810 WHB. He's not going to let us rain on his parade here. No siree.
Nor should he.
We'll get a break. Headlines coming up. And I just heard something in the update there from the iHeart Sports guy I want to bring up next on Softy and Dick on 950K.